This is the fourth evening lecture, the first hour. The first little bit I would like to give you here is very much to the point. It belongs at the end of this series. I'll give it to you now. Sort of a surprise, out of position, few remarks, which possibly for that reason might sink in as deeply as they should sink in. This has to do with how and when to audit. I'm not going to talk very long about this, but I'm going to talk very directly to the point. The auditor has as his goal bringing the preacher to present time and stabilizing him there. That definition for auditing, you see, would apply to auditing a person who was never going to be a Theta Clear, or would apply to a Theta Clear. So it would apply to somebody who was merely getting four or five sessions to get rid of his sciatica or something. And it would also apply to somebody who were Theta Clearing. It does not take very long to eradicate a psychosomatic ill, not with techniques such as match terminals. The fastest techniques, however, for momentary processing, eradication, few minutes, is creative processing in Scientology 8008, which is simply giving the person mock-ups, which is vaguely, any mock-up which is vaguely similar to the condition you find immediately. For instance, they can't touch their father, or they can't touch their father-in-law, or they can't, there's somebody in their immediate vicinity in which you will find most of the interbulation, and it will be a communications difficulty with that person. So you can put that down as a definition of what's wrong with a pre-clear from whom you wish to eradicate a psychosomatic illness. It is a present time communication difficulty with some individual, and the easiest way to solve it is simply to do mock-ups on a gradient scale until you have that individual in full view in front of them, and they can create or destroy that individual at will as a mock-up. And then they will find that they will be able to turn on enough sweetness and light for this individual to straighten out their difficulties. If you were just doing counseling, old-time counseling, marriage counseling, how would you go about it then? You would treat it as a present-time problem. You would not worry about the past. You would not worry about the future. You would just treat it as a present-time problem on the immediate assumption that there was a communications difficulty in present time with another individual. That does not get to the basic root of the case. That does not make a Theta clear out of them. That doesn't make a clear out of them or anything of the sort. That just does what the boys wished they could do for the last few centuries in terms of human behavior. That's all that does. But that, as what you might call an office technique, is, on this highly generalized basis, the technique which you would find it most profitable to employ. When you have a person who cannot get a mock-up just on this very short process, you're going to see them maybe an hour a day for a few days, or you're going to see them for a two-hour session or something of the sort, what would you use? Without any further survey into the situation, I'll tell you what to use. It's the next to the last list in self-analysis. Something really real, and so forth. Get them into communication with the fact that they've lived before, and they'll be much happier. That's all, because if they can't get a mock-up, the chances are pretty good that they're out of communication with themselves. And the fast way to put them into communication with themselves is to demonstrate to them that they have lived. It sounds idiotically simple, but it is nevertheless very, very pertinent. They have lived. Now, that would be your patch-up techniques. Now, what would you do with this person if you didn't have too much time. He couldn't get mock-ups. He can't get any mock-ups, so you give him next to last list and self-analysis. That's that. You can memorize that list. Very easy. You just ask him those questions in that sequence, and then you go back to the beginning of the list, and you ask him those questions in that sequence, and you go back to the beginning of the list, and you ask him those questions in that sequence. And the first thing you know, their life stretches out, and they have a time track. I say, what do you know? What do you know? I have lived before. In other words, I am surviving. That's all it tells them. I'm surviving. Now they're convinced they're surviving, and they're much happier. As a matter of fact, they'd be sufficiently enough happier to go around and tell all their friends they were now cured, whatever that means. You see? Because you have done what? In each case, whether you use a built-up mock-up or whether or not you use this next-to-the-last list, you have done essentially the same thing. You have changed the communication status of the individual. You have made it possible with the first technique for him to communicate now with somebody in his present time with whom he's had communications difficulties. Pam. You just pick the main person, the most difficulty he has in present time, you just process that out, and you've got it. And on the other one, you're saying, look, you're in communication with yourself for the first time. The way you've gotten communication with yourself is you've got a past. What do you know? You just are sitting there assuming that you have a past, and you didn't know you had a past, and now you are certain you have a past, and now you're all set. You don't tell them that, but that's you might as well be saying that, because that's what they'd be saying if they really knew what was happening to them. Those are two techniques, then, aren't they? They take in both kinds of cases that you will get, unless you get a real, roaring, full-blown psychotic. And the way to handle a full-blown psychotic, to straighten him out, is to kill him or cure him. Psychiatrist chooses the former. I hope you'll choose the latter. A full-blown psychotic is something that I wouldn't take on. I have processed my last psychotic, and I did so, actually, many years ago. And since that time, I've paid no further attention to them. I had a case file on psychotics at the very large. It's probably in somewhere in the vicinity of about, I'd say 400 or 500 psychotics. That's big practice, by the way. A psychiatrist doesn't get that much in years. 400 or 500 psychotics. One series of cases of 85 psychotics, I broke the psychosis on 80 of them. The other five, long-term duration sort of a thing. They were environmental difficulties in processing them rather than the severity of the psychosis. So, in all these respects, if you confront a full-blown psychotic, there's one thing you should do. If you want to find out where you're going to put this psychotic and who's going to take care of this psychotic. That's the first question you ask. That psychotic is not your responsibility. And the reason he's not your responsibility is because a psychotic can take up of an auditor's time, weeks and months of constant nerve-wracking upset. Might be that you ought to go out and find a psychotic just to learn this thing at first hand. Might do you a great deal of good as an auditor to just simply go out and find somebody who's really raving and get in there and pitch. Allocate 2 months of your life to it. Because you won't be satisfied until you got this person all the way out of the woods. This person has so many present time difficulties with communication that they include you. That's what I call psychosis. That makes an awful lot of psychotics walking the streets out here, doesn't it? You walk up to some fella and you say, how are you today? It's a nice day, isn't it? And he says to you, I was just down to the bookmakers. And you say, well, what have you been doing? Going to the razor, something like that? And he says, my wife hasn't been back for days. You're not there as far as he's concerned. He's inaccessible. In families where you're processing a pre-clear, and they all of a sudden tell you that some member of the family objects to their continuation of processing, if you were to go find that member of the family, you would be looking at a psychotic. Not a full-blown psychotic, but by definition a psychotic. One who is not in communication, even vaguely, with present time. They do not know what's confronting them in present time. That's a psychotic. That's all. This person, you find out, is probably, well, let's say it's the mother-in-law. And the mother-in-law says, well, he's just John, his son, he shouldn't be Something like this is a demonstration today. There's always been insanity in his family anyway, and that's what she's making all this trouble. If you were to go over and talk to this lady, you would go in and you would say, "How are you today?" And she would say, "Frying pans," if she said anything. Or she would maintain a communication lag, which was a set lag. Or if you tried to talk to her even vaguely, something dreadful or drastic would happen in the course of the conversation. You find yourself fighting. You go back over the conversation. You try to find out where you got into a fight. You can't find out. No, they just decided to fight. That's why you got into a fight. They all of a sudden were confronted with a leopard with purple spots, and they started to fight this leopard. Till you've looked into these people's heads, you don't appreciate that because they're accepted and tolerated in the home, and they go around and pat the kids on the head and trip them up and tell them fancy stories and scare them to death at night when they go to bed. And mom and papa or somebody, they don't know what's wrong with their kids. Well, they haven't got the full time track on the kid, that's all. Now, that could happen to old Uncle Joe, who's a harmless old coot who sits around and never says anything. Never says a thing. Never says a thing. Yeah, he's very easy to have around the house. He never says a thing up to the time when he burns the house down. You'd be surprised how many forms this takes. But your definition of the thing is a definition which is going to hold good. What's his communication value in present time? That's all. If his communication value with present time is such that he is not talking to the person who's standing in front of him, or who won't talk to the person who's standing in front of him, or if he is shut off and inaccessible in general, you have a psychotic because he's not communicating with present time. And on that person's time track, you will find a history of psychotic breaks, which the family wouldn't let you in on the first time. And on the future track, you will find burned down houses and wrecked cars. There's the picture. So when I say leave psychotics alone, I say just that, leave them alone. Never going to do you any good, never going to do society any good, to amount to anything, unless you stand there prepared to invest a great deal of processing time. Because a communications break of that sort is very difficult to repair. Because it takes you and your personality to repair it. Here's this situation. They say, we've always had psychotherapy for children. They haven't. But they say, we've always had psychotherapy for children. If we could give individually to each child 50 hours of attention and so forth, why we'd have all these children straightened out, but nobody's got that much time, and so therefore we can't straighten out these children. That's why there is no child psychotherapy. That's the way they put it. There's truth in that, if you had a process. You couldn't anymore start in from here and give 50 hours of Dianetic processing to every child in England. You'd start adding it up. They're getting born faster than that. Did you ever read Robert Ripley's Believe It or Not? Robert Ripley proves to you conclusively that Chinese walking four breaths past a given point in review would never finish passing that point. You could be standing there watching a parade of Chinese walking four breaths in front of you, and there'd be new Chinese all the time, and you'd never get the Chinese race past that point. They multiply faster than that. They're just more being born than that. And he never explains just how they're going to do this while they're walking. But anyway. The point is, so you couldn't tackle this problem in the form of the individual child. Well, there are more adults around to be processed than there are children, at least as many. Well, what's this make? This tells you you're either going for broke or you're trying to make a few bucks. And there isn't any intermediate point. We're not going to make a pretty good thing out of Scientology by processing a few people. It's never going to go over the top by processing a few people. Nunca. Never. But it can go over the top by processing a whole lot of people. Well, just how we solve that problem, we'll be thinking it over one of these days. We'll have the solution to that. Because what do we got right here? We have a group processing process. We can process groups. Home. We can process as many people who's in this room tonight. They all walk out of here and they feel fine. They go to work tomorrow morning and say, "Where's my lumbago?" They just wonder about that. There'd be five or six of them and say, I never knew I had lumbago before. But they could always come back. But they could always come back for the next evening's processing. So, it could go about this way, you know. You could make theta clear and you could polish him up and get him up to the level of operating theta and so good and so high you could just simply go out and solve all the problems of the world. Would he solve the problems of the world if he did that? No. No. He just fixed it up so people were cared for and were dependent now upon a theta. Theta named Bill or something who graduated from the school a few months before. You see, that isn't a work. Man has got to walk out of the hole he's in as man, not as a couple of guys. You find that will work out that way eventually. He's not going to get out of the hole he's in, plastering himself and his neighbors with atom bombs and electric shocks and super welfare statism and fascism, all kinds of weirdisms. He's not going to do that. So an auditor, by the way, has just as much responsibility for this as anybody else, you know? Interesting, isn't it? He has just as much responsibility for this as anybody else. The main difference between myself as an investigator and others is I think I took more responsibility for what I was doing. That's just about it. And it becomes a problem to me. Why? Somebody else doesn't take this much responsibility. I'm sort of got blinders on. I think, gee whiz, there's all these school kids, and these school kids have been having a rough time, and all of these kids packed into rooms, lousy curriculum, master just in horrible shape. Why? He's got too many students. He's got too many bosses. These kids come from homes that are all upset and backwards and so forth. It's a big problem, big problem. One of the solutions to this has to do with the fact that if you were to take the present time age bracket between 6 and 12 and straighten it out, Scientology would have won, hands down, in about 15 years. You see, that's so it becomes a very easy thing, doesn't it? Well, the auditor's level of responsibility is not a small one. It gets bigger. And the reason it gets bigger is he has the data. And when he has the data, now he's got some responsibility. It isn't a responsibility to find out how many pounds he might be able to make. You know, I'm making more money in Hollywood in a month than I think I've made in 3 years in Dianetics. That's no kidding. So money hasn't got too much to do with it. After all, what do you do with this money? You go out and you buy some mess and it gets you into more trouble. But here you have the information. You should know how to use that information. And we're trying to keep some sort of a show on the road here, but each one of you has got a show. Truth of the matter. You go around processing a psychotic whose papa happens to own the Vickers or not saying that's the case, but I mean some big guy, he gives you five Rolls Royces for bringing little Dorothea out of her 89th spin. You can do that. Sure you can. Sure you can. One of the solutions that was put forward to me a long time ago was put forward to me very interestingly by a couple of boys, wouldn't you know it, in Hollywood. They said, well, why don't we get 4 or 5 millionaires and process them all up to clear? All of us auditors pitch in on it, and then we'd have plenty of money, and that would be the end of the problem. And I said, be the end of what problem? And he said, well, the problem about money. Yeah, there isn't any problem about money. Truth be told, any good printer can make more money than the government can. But anyway, when you get yourself a nice... You confront this thing called security, very often it kind of digs you in behind the ramparts, you know? And you say, I've kind of got to hold the fort here somehow or other because, let's see, I need to make 2 pounds because 2 pounds is 2 pounds. And if I don't make 2 pounds, so on. I tell you something very funny. Money is an attention unit. A crown, a dollar, a mark, a franc is simply an attention unit. And do you know that money can be regarded as attention? And it follows exactly the laws of attention. Isn't that peculiar? There is the lucky fluke of the guy who all of a sudden opens up a safe or something and finds he has $8 billion or something, and he says, "Now I'm going to take this out $1 after another, and I'm going to keep myself the rest of my life." Every once in a while, the police tear up some old home, and they find some guy died of starvation, and he had $800,000 parked up in paper sacks or something of the sort. Well, you, as an individual, will make as much money as you attract pro-survival attention. You can you can plot how much money any man is going to make just with that. You can plot them as they walk in to a processing section. This fellow is going to make so much. His life potential from here on in terms of currency is going to be just this much. It'll be your communication lag index. Because he can get as much attention pro-survival as he's in present time. Nobody ever got any attention out of present time that was pro-survival. It was contra-survival attention. The police arrested him or something of the sort. You get the difference of this. Money flows toward points which attract pro-survival attention. All you've got to do is stand up there and keep on being pro-survival and be pro-survival in a widening communicating sphere, and you will just have to start throwing this stuff away. You just turn your back on it. It gets a little bit tough after a while. You just have to turn your back on it. Because money gets you in trouble faster than anything I know. More people start jumping in the second they think you got a few bucks. Wonderful. I mean, insurance brokers. All your time's taken up with trying to fight off security salesmen. You got money. But this is something you kind of ought to put down. You make money as much as you get attention, and you get as much attention in a society as far as you put your communication lines out. And if you don't put your communication points out in the society, there isn't any flow in terms of money. That answers the buck, but it answers something else at the same time. It tells you to put out those communication lines. Put them way out. You take the data which you have and try, just try, and work for 10 hours a day giving it away. You'll be in trouble. You won't be able to handle that much money. That's all, in terms of attention. Just try 10 hours a day. Give it away. If you try to sell it, you're in the position of a guy trying to sell gold pieces for pennies. Nobody will buy gold pieces for pennies. They just don't do that. A gold piece is a gold piece, and nobody sells them, and so forth. An orderly practice actually is not indicated for a Scientologist. It's dull. In the British Isles, America, and so forth, there are knitting societies, ladies' aid societies, holy rollers, anything you want to mention. They're just groups of people, and they get together, and sometimes they even plan to do something. They never do anything. But you have these tremendous resources in terms of all these mobs of people out here, just all this raw material running around. But if you have a tendency to be out of communication with Homo sapiens, you're never going to reach them. So don't have a tendency. In present time, put those anchor points out. Because the next thing you know, you'll find yourself doing this and doing that. Now, another thing, right under the heading of how to audit is your job. Explaining what Scientology is all about isn't. You will bog yourself down faster. Now, supposing you were an electrical engineer And you had a fixation on this idea that you had to go out, and everybody you talked to, you explained the whole subject of thermodynamics. And everybody you talked to, you started in from the beginning, and you explained thermodynamics to them. You're not in communication. You're not even vaguely in communication. You start telling people what Scientology is all about, and you're going to go out of communication. You might as well start in on thermodynamics. They know they haven't got a mind. And if they had one, it would be too complex to solve. They know all that. In order to bring them up at all you have to do is demonstrate results. For God's sakes, be an expert. I've told you about Navigator. Navigator, the mystery of the bridge, and all that sort of thing. Practice that all you want to. It's perfectly healthy. Because you're at a level now where your basic tenets, the basic tenets of Dianetics, are extremely acceptable. We'll try to get out a little pamphlet so you can kind of give this to somebody quick, you know, and he can read it over if he wants to know about it. But you're the fellow who makes it work. And there's lots more of this, you understand? You go around, you know, and you try to explain to everybody about gradient scales, and you try to explain to them about state of mist, and you're not communication. And all you demonstrate to them is that there's no communication level possible. So you don't get attention. How do you get attention? Well, it takes a fairly overt fellow, which you ought to make out of yourself, a fellow who is slightly gregarious. And just for the sake of your own therapy, you ought to learn to walk up to a person in the street and say, "How are you? What is the matter with your left eye?" "Oh, is that so? That's very interesting." And give him your card or have him sit down on the park bench and fix up his left eye. That takes brass, doesn't it? That means that every third or fourth fellow that you meet might be willing to get his eye fixed up. But that means there's going to be two or three there that you run into. They're going to say, "Who the hell is this nut?" Well, you have to be able to take that. Until you're able to take that, you're not in good shape. It's actually a test of where a guy is on the tone scale. You should be able to walk down into the ward of the fanciest hospital we've got around here. Walk down into the front office and say, "Well, where is the doctor on watch? I'm a Scientologist, and I want your last accident case." "What's the name? What's the name of the last accident case?" "Jones, yes, Jones. Yes, I want Jones." Simply go up and run out the incident out of Jones. You'd be surprised how many times you would find yourself somewhat dazedly sitting there running the incident out of Jones. You'd be amazed. It takes brass. You have to be willing to accept any God's quantity of kicks in the teeth, and you can accept them very easily, because anybody that'll kick you in the teeth on a mission like that is so far out of communication, he hasn't got enough horsepower even to ridicule you. What are you afraid of him for? That's all. Actor always figures, you know, that an audience that won't applaud for him, so what's just stupid? Well, you can figure the same way, only you'll figure right. Any fellow that's saying, "Now, let's see, these are my patients," he's having a bad time. So, I walked into a health center once. Great big county health center and everything. I said, where's your resident doctor, man in charge, and so forth? Went up to see him. I said, "How do I get your charity list of patients here? Psychosis, neurosis, things like that, charity patients and so forth." And he said, "Well, you'll have to see so-and-so down the hall." And I went down the hall and I said, "They just sent me down here in the front office. How many people do you have on charity here?" The fella says, "Why, we've got so many people and so forth." "Has he got their names? Got their names?" "Well, they have their names down in the office down there." I went down to the office and I said down there, I said, "Scotch said, give me the names of all the people you got in charity." So they did. And I went back up to the top office then. I said, "I'm going to take these people and straighten them out and so forth. And my name and address and telephone number, so and so. If you get any more, let me know, won't you?" Shook him by the hand, walked out. Processed about 20 people. They all got well. About 6 weeks later, see, telephone call. You didn't say you were a doctor. And something very mysterious has happened. Is you cleaned up our charity list. There isn't anybody on our charity list now. I said, I know. Well, what'd you do? That's what's known as communication lag. Now you'll find yourself as an auditor fighting the hidden influence. The state has laws. This outfit has laws. That outfit has laws. This, if you're worried about this, you're fighting the hidden influence. You really are. We have to know what our legal position is, where we stand. But actually, you can't possibly get into any trouble, particularly if you leave psychotics alone. It's just good sense for Scientology to do so. It's just good sense to do so. There's no reason to tie up. You know, you're valuable. You really are. You have information. There's no sense in tying up all the information and all that you can do for weeks and weeks and weeks alongside of some raving madman that when you get him all well, we'll be able to sit still for a change. That's right. 5 months later, you find out you were processing the GE all the time. Wasn't any fate in there. All right. I hope this gives you a little thought about practice. It's very amusing. I made a remark like this on the platform some weeks ago, months ago, years ago, contracts being what they are. And a couple of the boys listened. And out of the whole audience, they were the only two that did anything about it. They promptly went out in the street, turned around, went in opposite directions, and everybody they found who was lame, halt, or blind, they gave them their name and address. Talked to them about it, and they came back. One of them came back to see me, and he says, "You know something?" He says, "Nobody turned me down. Everybody's very happy to see me." And they talked about it. I got an appointment to audit one of them about right now, and I got to be going. Bye. Nearly everybody works on this theory. There are two entities with which I am confronted. One is me, and the other is the rest of the world. And the rest of the world is collected all together, and they are a group, and they know. And then there's just me, and I'm pretending I'm part of that group, but I know I don't know. And therefore, it's sort of me here and them there. You see, that's sort of a theory. Now, what do you know? Everybody feels like that. Isn't that a hell of a joke? So that you go into any group, if you take aside any individual by himself, you can produce very fantastic effects. You just say, well, there's that group over there and you. You don't say who you are. You can do this to the head of a hospital. He, fortunately or unfortunately, is simply human. You say, people are all wondering why you don't. And he'll say, gee, are they? In other words, everybody is running on a one-terminal basis to a large degree. And if he has a second terminal, he's using that horrible word they. They think. They do. Who's they? It's just another bunch of these. All right. Enough of that. Your case level is best demonstrated to yourself on the amount of brass, pure brass, that you can find in yourself. In other words, in other phrases, poise, self-confidence, presence. Being in present time and getting be a theta clear actually does give you an awful lot of personal presence. If it doesn't give you personal presence, then there's an awful lot of bugs there that haven't been worked out. That's all. And what kind of bugs are they? Communication. You became a theta clear, but your communication level didn't change. So you aren't really a theta clear at all. So let's take a look at that. And when you find yourself feeling like you're perfectly capable of going up to the nearest body and saying, "I say, old man, I've always wanted to tell a cop off. Why don't you jump under that truck?" And if you could do that without batting an eye and simply walk on down the street, you're in good shape. In real good shape. And if you're in that condition, he won't say a word. As a matter of fact, he's liable to dive under the truck. Well, now let's get on to a little bit more of this how to audit. We can cover that last section under the basis of who you are. If you're just going to be a guy that sits at a desk and processes somebody when he shows up, you're not going to get any place. Circulate. This next has to do with how you audit various people. What do you have to do to get good results with a pre-clear and to stay in good condition yourself? An interesting one, isn't it? Every auditor that's done any auditing has been up against two terminals. And if he will just take his past auditing, if he has sort of paled a little bit on the idea of auditing people, if he'll just take his last few sessions and if he'll mock up another person in the room and run those sessions over again with another person mocked up in the room observing it, what do you know? Any effect he might have had from that auditing will blow. Why? Most of the time, when you're auditing somebody who's lying down, what's going to keep you in present time? You're interested in this person's past, aren't you? And at best, you're looking at something that is simulating a corpse. It's lying down, isn't it? Here we have the condition. Those moments are most aberrative where attention is not being given, not being received, or is unnoticed. The most aberrative moments are concerned with that. Attention is not being given, not being received, or is going unnoticed. What happens in that case is you actually will draw out of your bank any reserve of sympathy or admiration which you have as an energy, and you just burn it up. Fascinating. Gee, he's just a machine. And he'll burn up the past so hard that he'll bring the past right up with him. And all of a sudden, he's sitting out present time, the past is here, and he's back there, and all of his communication lines are little black twists of licorice, and he wonders what in the name of common sense happened to him. Well, I'll tell you what happened to him. He sat there and audited somebody who was lying down. His whole attention is on the past, and he is observing a form which is in the posture of death. The only way he could sympathize with that form would be to be dead or audit himself. And after a while, an auditor will drift out of present time when a pre-clear is being overlong at something and start to audit himself. Well, you know just exactly what's happening there? He's trying to be the same as. He's trying hard to be the same as, and he's out of present time, and he has the pre-clear there. So, to be sympathetic with the pre-clear and get anything possible with that pre-clear in the lines of communication, he sort of has to be the same as the pre-clear. So what's he do? He starts kicking in engrams to audit while the pre-clear is running his, and the auditor will audit himself straight out of present time. Why does he do this? Very simple. It's just one of those moments where attention isn't being given or received, or is going unnoticed. The pre-clear has his eyes closed. He really isn't paying much attention to the auditor. This isn't so bad when you're running phrases. It isn't so bad when you're in constant communication with the pre-clear. But I am giving this to you now, at this time, because you are embarking upon matching terminal processing, which takes a lot of silence. You'll find yourself sitting there an awful lot of the time with nothing going on. So this problem becomes crucial. It isn't just one of these problems that we had better do. But now that we enter in on the matching terminals, I can tell you what will happen because I know what happened after we introduced lock scanning. And invented this lock scanning technique and didn't change auditing procedure. And the first thing you know, we have half the auditors in the place doped off and out of present time and self-auditing. Why is this? It's because the pre-clear was lying there for an hour at a stretch running a chain of locks without the auditor saying anything to him. And the auditor had no choice but to start auditing chains of locks. Next thing you know, the auditor then is out of present time. An auditor winds himself up in this fashion in deaths. How still do you get? Dead. How do you sympathize with a dead body? Dead. That's why life continuum's too rough. You see, you just wanted to sympathize with this body and bring this person to life again, and so you start to sympathize with them to give them life. And where do they go? They go on and die. That leaves you where? Some people park at grief, some people park at apathy, and they don't go on from there. Why? They can't be dead. Well, you can go on from there, and so can your pre-clear. All you do is just mock up the fellow on a double terminal basis. You go ahead and sympathize with him being dead, and that's the end of the engram. All right, so you don't have to worry about grief charge in running this kind of life continuum out. In other words, running loss, engrams of loss. All right, let's go back to this other problem. There's your pre-clear. Your pre-clear starts to cry. That kind of has a tendency to latch you up in grief. Your pre-clear starts to get mad. In other words, you're at the mercy of what? The two-terminal system. Argue all you want to about it. It's a rough deal. Now, a theta clear can audit successfully simply by going off to the other side of the room and watching his body and the pre-clear's body. Here he has two terminals and he's not part of them. Except his body is getting a counter discharge, unprotected, so forth. He isn't doing his body any good when he's doing it. The funny part of it is this becomes negligible. The amount of interchange and charge passed back and forth becomes negligible when an auditor is auditing two terminals. Now, there's two solutions for this, three solutions. The first solution is to use two auditors and audit very intensively on some pre-clear. The solution has been tried quite often. It's found to be very successful. In doing mock-up processing, intensive mock-up processing, two auditors then could expect not only to stay in present time, but could expect to be well advanced on the case of the pre-clear. In other words, the pre-clear is going to get well a lot faster. This has been tested, and it's been found to be the case. That's because you've got two minds working on the same subject, but it's also, in addition to that, it keeps the auditor completely in present time because each one of the two auditors is looking at two terminals. And he's very happy about it. And he's never part of the two-terminal system. He's the third party. All right. That's one solution. Another one is to have some office help. You have a girl or a janitor or something of the sort, and every time you give a session, just have them come in and sit down. That's all. And the other one is to make the pre-clear furnish the other terminal. Say, okay, I'll give you a session, so forth. Who are you going to bring over? Well, just me. You see, I have a lot of private things. When I was in boys' school, you see, you say, well, who are you going to bring over? And you're really impressed. Now, do you want, if this fellow's a man, do you want him to bring over with him a man or a woman? Obvious, a man. You're auditing a man, you want a man. If you're auditing a girl, you want a girl. Let me tell you something. You go in for auditing very many girls, you'd be very, very smart. And if you, as a girl auditor, go in for auditing very many men, you'd be very smart. Always to have another one of the same sex as the pre-clear on the premises, right in front of you, right there. The reason for this is very simple. Not the only way doctors ever get in trouble is some girl goes flying off the handle all of a sudden and says, well, you know, we're awfully good friends, you know, and innuendo. More doctors have ruined their reputations this way, and I could count. This is very practical, this whole thing. And it's something you don't want to get involved with. All right? You'll find yourself occasionally, God help you, in a session where the preclear has nothing on his or her mind but sex. And you're liable to get bogged down in such a deal. You try to run engrams and so forth. Because you start running people below the level of grief and in apathy, and there's satyrism and nymphomania present. And you key that in, and pam, they're terrifically excited in that direction. Or somebody else on the premises. Because if you say, no, bye, I mean, sorry, and they go out and they say, you know what that nugget did? He's trying to rape me. Fine. I'm sorry to have to get so down to earth on something like that, but we're living in, for most of us, I hope, 1953. And the society moving out there in 1890 doesn't understand these various things. All right. Therefore, if you want to stay in present time, continue to be interested in auditing, be very alert, and never have auditing bother you, have another terminal there. Even though it's trouble, even though it's upsetting, and so forth. That is not just optimum condition. You're all of a sudden moving into the technique of matching terminals. That means your preclear is going to sit there for a long time and be doped off and so on. It's going to be holding two terminals, and they'll be holding two terminals for a half an hour. Anything happens. As far as you can see, lots happening with them. But you just told them, all right, have these two men now, each one cuts his throat and lies down and dies and goes into rigor mortis. And that can go on for a long time. Because here they've got one, and he just cuts his throat, see, and they have to put up a second one in here cutting his throat, too. They finally get that. They got two guys cutting their throat simultaneously. Now we have to go on to the next step and so forth. And they understand this. You're asking every once in a while, what are you doing? How's it getting along? And all that sort of thing. But at the same time, there's these long silences. And you as an auditor shouldn't have to occupy those by auditing yourself. No dice. So there's another solution will offer itself to you is throw a dummy in the office. Might have some degree of workability, but you'd be surprised how little attention a dummy can give anything. All right. Now, when do you audit? Don't audit anybody during a period of severe physical pain. In other words, don't audit somebody right away, quick, while they're flying through the windshield in an automobile accident. That's the wrong time to audit somebody. Don't audit somebody when he has just lost 8 quarts of blood or something of the sort. You're dealing with a machine to a large degree in the GE, and it follows and obeys certain rules. And you'll do very well to observe these. Now, don't audit somebody late at night. When that hour hits about 10, they're right in the middle of the engram, hand them their hats and send them home. I mean, you could do that and be on the safe side. They're right in the middle of something, and it's very hot and so forth, and it's 10 o'clock, and you say, well, that's fine, we finished up the next session, good night. You think that'd be very damaging and very harmful. That is less damaging, and in the long run will prove to be, we're just talking about averages now, the old man will tell you something out of his experience with this, observing other auditors at work. You're on the safe side if you do that. Knock it off about 10. Your auditor judgment may tell you, well, we just couldn't possibly drop this preclear at this time. Well, now you're going to pick it up the following day. All right, you pick it up the following day. But you tell him you're going to pick it up the following day. Give him another appointment. Because here's what could happen. You say, that is red hot, and I could tap it right now, and it'll only take another 45 minutes to run that whole thing out, and then we'll be finished with it, and so forth. And by the way, you've just about 10:30 passed the average tolerance point of the body. You won't do anything of the sort. You won't audit that out. You hit 10 o'clock and a red hot engram in full restimulation. Drop it like a hot potato, because it's really going to be flaming 45 minutes later. And if it's 1 o'clock in the morning, you will find that that engram is getting worse. And if it's 2, it'll be much worse. So you could audit from 2 till, you could audit from 10 o'clock till 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock in the morning on this confounded thing and just have your preclear get worse. Whereas you could go till 4 o'clock the next afternoon, pick him up again and give him a session. That sounds completely idiotic, doesn't it? Yet the body is built out of things which have a habit pattern. And that habit pattern is to be less energetic and less resistive at night than in the daytime. People die on the average at about 2 o'clock in the morning. At sunset, vitality of the body, real vitality, we're not talking now about late pub crawling or something, sorry, starts to die out about sunset and dwindles down the line. And unless booted very heavily with alcohol or something of the sort, gets into pretty sorry condition, really, about 10:30. And then gets progressively worse until we hit at 2 o'clock. If you were to take basal metabolism and all the rest of that sort of thing on a person, you would find that his general fluids and humors and so on, we're in horrible condition. And you start auditing somebody at 1 o'clock in the morning on the theory you'll be able to do them some good. No, you won't. You're going to have to do all the auditing over again if they're still alive at 2 o'clock the next afternoon. So just write it down in your book and break the rule once or twice just to teach yourself a good lesson. You'll never do it again, I guarantee you. Every now and then, some auditor will get away with it. He'll get away with it. That's the freak. That's the freak chance. That's not what will happen ordinarily. Human beings just don't survive well after 10 o'clock. And you get something hot into restimulation, and you figure you should lock off the session. Well, I said you could, and I said it very crudely. You could hand him his hat and say, all right, I'll see you tomorrow afternoon. You could, with less damage, but that isn't, of course, what you do. You just take that next last list, no matter who he is. You hit some kind of a hot engram, something, you sort of take the next to last list and self-analysis and just give it to him. Remember something real? Time you're reading communication? Time you felt some affinity? Time somebody felt some affinity to you? Time some... Got that? Got that? That's right. Good night, Mr. Jones. That's all there is to it, you see. Or you could actually lock scan him through the session. But you're getting perilously close to the deadline. And to lock scan somebody through anything at that hour of the night is, on the average, with preclears, bad. Now, the next thing with regard to auditing, if you start auditing somebody who's very badly anatomed, your auditing goes in as an engram. Now, that is justifiable, then, in terms of an assist. Person's pretty anatomed, you go ahead and audit them. Remember always to go back then and audit the whole thing through again and audit the auditing out, because the auditing is in there just as solid as the engram material. Just because we have matching terminals and theta clearing and so forth does not mean that there isn't such a thing as pain and unconsciousness. Believe me, we haven't altered a darn thing. It's quite amusing at this stage to realize that we can take matching terminals as a technique, and we can do successfully, practically with any individual, any technique we've had in the past on a double terminal basis. In other words, we lock scan where we lock scan two tracks side by side. Try it sometime if you want to really snarl your wits up. But anyway, lock scan two tracks side by side simultaneously. And lock scanning works like mad. In other words, all these old techniques we can use, but we don't have to use them. you've spent time studying them, you're interested in them, you know what they are. Remember that you could apply them all on a double terminal basis with practically no liability whatsoever and probably a great deal of success. With double terminals, we've become about 150 times as good. It should have been twice as good. It's about 150 times as good. All right. What then should we watch for in a preclip? The eyelids. Watch his eyelids. When he has his eyes closed, do his eyeballs wander from side to side? You see mine working there? Can you see that? Watch his eyeballs under his eyelids and see if they're doing that. He's hypnotized. All right, now watch my eyelids. See that? See that flutter? See that little flutter? He's hypnotized. He's Anatin. Now, if you will listen to a pre-clear breathing in the vicinity of an accident or something of the sort, you will be able to tell whether or not this pre-clear is pretty bad off. And you'll know how hard you could hit in giving him an assist. If the breathing is slow and regular, even if shallow, it's all right. You don't have to worry too much about that. Slow, regular, shallow. That's not the critical point. When that breath gets to where it's irregular, it's deep and shallow, it's irregular in depth, and it's irregular in timing, watch it. Breathing, people should breathe about 16 times a minute, something like that, 20 times a minute. And that's normal breathing. But you can really tell when a person's breathing mechanisms start clipping out on them and his timing goes off. If they're breathing just monotonously, they'd be pretty much all right, you know. But you will get an exception to that rule. Once in a while, in a real bad off case, they just let out a horrible gasp, and then they wait for a while, and they gasp again, and so on. They sound like a fish who just landed. That's unmistakable. The breathing of a psychotic is so unmistakable that you, as an auditor, will someday be able to recognize the state of sanity of the individual just by watching his breathing. Everybody starts to breathe self-consciously. Now, that's very much the case, though. So, if a person appears to be fairly awake and that sort of thing, when you're going to give them assist or do some auditing or they're in bad shape, something like that, just listen to that breath for a few minutes and you'll be able to tell. You'll say, this person is not breathing normally. This person is breathing with catches and pants. Or this person is breathing... There's fear has a certain breathing level. And sometimes people reassure you a great deal with a certain breath level. They'll be sort of like that. You have to see somebody really with that one. It would be almost impossible to approximate. But they'll reassure you that they're all right, that everything is okay, that they're not going to do anything, that everything's going to be all right, and if you just let them get a little sleep or something of the sort, you turn your back and they kick the bucket or jump out the window or something terrific happens. When a person starts breathing in that fashion, you're right on the ball. Where are they on the tone scale? They're around 1-0, which is awful close to 1-1. These people who tell you, I'm all right, and then you turn your back and they blow their brains out. We're breathing like that when they said, I'm all right. And if the person who saw them just before that, had any brains at all, he could have seen it on the flutter of the chest. Well, there isn't anything very difficult about this. You can tell whether or not a person is conscious or unconscious. And you'll very often find that you think you're looking at a conscious person and he's unconscious. His eyeballs wander, his eyelids flutter, his breathing is catchy and irregular, and he'll answer normal questions. You're dealing with a person that you have to wake up or that you have to let, if they've been under surgery or something of the sort or in an accident, that you have to permit to recover before you can do any auditing on them. The body has to patch itself up a long way before you can do any auditing. You get the idea? So, what's your answer in such a case? How do you wake a person up who is that deeply entranced? The best way to wake them up is to get them some sleep. Sounds strange, doesn't it? The best way to wake them up is to let them get some sleep. People only go into an hypnotic trance when they're terribly tired. You'll notice in auditing a preclear late at night that he has a tendency to get his eyelids doing that and his eyeballs wandering. You've audited him into a trance. And if you were to go back over the auditing, he would probably say to you, "What auditing?" You want to audit people who are awake, not people who are asleep. Now, on the subject of this, watch auditing people who are on a starvation ration. Some people don't realize it, but they don't eat. And you get somebody who's on a real good, solid starvation ration and try to audit him. And he'll spin. Everything you start doing for him, he starts to spin. What's wrong with him? You need auditing? No, he doesn't need auditing. He needs a hamburger. That's the end of that. You'll find people who are quite psycho, by the way, will start starving themselves. Well, then there's the person who starts to have dreams because of your auditing. Why does he have dreams? He's low on B1. You start giving a person a lot of heavy auditing, he's not taking any B1, he's in bad shape. Now, I'm not telling you that I'm prescribing B1 for the patients. I'm merely quoting Abbott and Company's advertising. And that says unmistakably that if you don't slip some thiamine chloride to your preclear, he's going to start having nightmares. That's all there is to it. A person can't stand too much auditing without getting dreams. And when your preclear starts having dreams, that's because he's too low on B1. So you slip him some B1, and that means what you've been doing to the GE was a little bit too tough for the GE. Person starts seeing spiders and snakes and everything else. What's the matter with him? Low on B1. Something wrong with your auditing? The only thing wrong with your auditing was you didn't keep your eye peeled on this preclear. This preclear probably didn't eat too well in the first place, doesn't eat too well. And the next thing you know, why, he uses up all the thiamine chloride in his system, he's busy having nightmares. Now, again, that is not prescribing for your preclear, and you must never prescribe for your preclear.